get back on this quick.
I'm getting a little angry. Callie, how you doing?
You mass record?
I did.
All right, we're back in session.
Okay.
Discussion presentation of anticipated FEMA reimbursement requests.
Yes, sir. Mr. Mayor, this is just a discussion and presentation, just to update you all. We put at the end of the agenda to the beginning because I want to present some numbers with what we have so far. We've continued to gather and organize our data associated with the Hurricane Helene and FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, will reimburse us for hopefully all, but at least some of the cost of Hurricane Helene. That has been a, if you've ever heard that sometimes FEMA can be slow, they certainly can be.
That's
good people that we've been working with, but it's been a slow process as they're managing dozens, if not hundreds, of other cities and counties our size impacted by this. Our state agency that is our liaison to FEMA has been stretched thin as well. But it's given us the opportunity to begin gathering our data. Just a couple notes about this before we start going through the numbers. One, this is just what we're estimating so far. As we continue to get invoices, as we get to dive really deep into the payroll numbers, this will probably increase significantly. It also is possible that FEMA may reject some of what our requests will be. Well, my job, at least I'm taking my job, to be give them as much as I can and let them be the ones to tell us no. So I'm documenting that the best I can. And so we expect this to continue to increase as we continue to dive into this over the next few months. We have not had our exploratory call with FEMA yet, meaning that they haven't given us their initial guidance. This is just from what I've read online and through some of the online trainings I've approved that I believe to be eligible to this that we've tracked. I give Chief Smith a lot of credit. He went through this in 2017, I believe, with Hurricane Irma, and he was our point man for Hurricane Irma back then. And so he's been an incredible resource for someone who's done this before, and he's had his fire department really taken care of and gave me all the numbers that I thought I needed already. So.
Well, why does he need $9.58?
Mr. Mayor, if we can get $9.58 from FEMA, we're going to get $9.58.
Yeah, I just wonder why Michael wants $9.58.
$9.59.
I do.
Yeah.
That's FEMA's rate that they're paying us to use the tank saw for the amount of time we run a tank saw.
Oh, my word.
Is it just 1 hour?
It
was a little over an hour combined through the course of the whole day after the night of the hurricane.
And that was just fire department. That does not count the chainsaws we used in.
So the fire department only used one chainsaw for 1 hour during the whole hurricane.
We used more than one, but it only totaled 1 hour.
And those numbers might be a little, I don't have them in front of me, I apologize. I can provide them to you in an admin report if you'd like.
I just thought the decimal was in the wrong place, and you meant 95.80.
No, ma'am.
You meant $9.58.
That's why I wanted to ask.
Are we only able to submit for overtime hours?
No, sir. So presented to you, that's part of the data that was most available. The way our payroll reports are run, the overtime is just on top, so I don't have to go through and pick it out yet. I haven't got to dig into it.
So there's going
to
be a lot of additional.
There will be a lot more, and I don't want to put a number on it to be definite, but it could be as many as $50,000 to $75,000 additional on top of this as invoices and payroll continues to come in to be included in the spreadsheet.
Yep.
This is the high overview of what we have so far. Okay. I do believe fire department, apart from those regular hours, are already included in there, so that one probably won't grow a whole lot more. Utility, and Michael was great getting that to me right on top of. They were tracking as it was coming in. Utility, who was all over the place fixing a lot of different things, we're having to go back and document a lot more of that in retrospect and try to figure out where that was. So we're still doing a lot of work on utility. But just some of the highlights that we have so far, the overtime for utility was over $20,000 during that week and that pay period. We have over $80,000 from a couple of what I'm going to call miscellaneous and contract expenses. The three biggest ones that I included for you all was the bridge bypass, and that includes the materials and the crew that we contracted to help accomplish that as quickly as Scott did. Was $47,000, almost $48,000. We had a crew from Alabama, from Decatur, Alabama, that was instrumental in us getting our power back on for our community as early as Sunday and Monday. That's 23,000. And then we had some additional large trees. Our crews were not able to remove. The Anderson Park, and I believe Anderson Avenue, if I'm not mistaken, were $7,000 for that group. And there's some other miscellaneous expenses. We fed our guys, which was important to keep them happy and motivated during this time, and also it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But we fed our crews. We had some other additional expenses here and there, replacement of equipment that we used. And then as we continue to document the vehicle hours, we continue to document the chainsaw hours, that will continue to increase.
Reagan, at the bottom, it's got not included. It includes the cost to install the new water line across the Chauga Bridge. So you've got that is not included, but you've got the $47,000 included. So is it?
So that's just the bypass. That's not the new permanent one.
Right.
So we still have to install the permanent line after DOT builds their new bridge across 76, Chauga River. That's not included. That may be reimbursable through DOT. We're working through that process with DOT and FEMA to see what the best source and the quickest source to get that money reimbursed.
Okay. One question for Scott. Just out of curiosity, why is it $47,000 to put that pipe just laying it on the bridge? It didn't have to be dug in or anything.
Almost $42,000 of that was in tier.
Wow.
Really?
Yes. Because so the new water line that goes through there is a 10-inch duct line pipe.
Yeah.
The line that crosses the bridge is an 8-inch. So we knew that it would work. We wanted something we could work with and it was readily available. So we found an 8-inch duct line, which we would need that for exposure. We got 8-inch duct line. We had to get a locking gasket to hold everything together. And the feedings to go with it. That totaled just under $42,000.
Wow.
The contract crew that came in, they bent over backwards to help us. Mm-hmm. Gave us a good deal on the labor because they had two full crews plus the skid steer that they brought with them. I thought their price was very reasonable and huge help to us.
So was it 500-600 feet?
Say right at 700.
What?
Yes.
That just surprised me that it was that much and it didn't have to be buried. That pipe has really gotten expensive.
It is. Definitely.
And Scott, our plan for now, we will still be able to hopefully reclaim that pipe.
Correct. Our plan is to reclaim the pipe that the USDA crew put across the bridge, hung on the bridge, and also the bypass one once it's taken out of service. That's our plan. Reclaim as much of that material as we can.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions for FEMA-related
items? Under the fire department labor, we're missing a number. Is that 6,940 and 31, or is it
4,310? It should be 40 or a dollar amount after that. Forgive me for that typo.
Curiosity kills the cat.
Thank you for that.
Any more questions? All right, next presentation regarding the vacant building registry by Assistant City Administrator Reagan Osmond.
Y'all wondering if we're getting our money's worth out of Reagan, I think.
Great. If y'all would like, I'll be presenting up here. You're welcome to position yourselves however you need to.
It's the same thing we got in our hand,
yeah,
right?
It's also
yes, sir.
Okay.
You do have it in here. Kevin's doing a presentation immediately after this, so I'm not sure I get the right one. All right. Can you all see that? Okay, you're following along well.
I got it right here.
So City Council, if you remember, back in 2023, you all brought to us, and I believe this was something that you all drove, an initiative to begin to document and require property owners to register vacant buildings across the city. You did that through, directed us to draft an ordinance which you approved, in September of 2023. We then, as staff, went out and we identified and notify the property owners. They had to register for this registry, and then as years subsequently go by, that fine increases, the registration fee increases. So for most residential homes, it costs nothing the first year. I believe this year it goes up to $50 and subsequently so on. We've identified over 80 vacant buildings as of September, and 38 of those remain vacant, and 11 of those 38 are under construction or remodel. Just as a briefer, and this isn't super important, but I want you to just have some perspective and let you know our processes behind it. We have three categories of buildings that we're classifying. So one, if there's no code violations, it's called a Category 1. Category 2 is some or minimal code violations. And Category 3 is that level where really it kind of becomes borderline unsafe, substantial code violations, and it could become a public nuisance. This is the fee structure for registering on this. So the way that this works, as I mentioned earlier, you have to register. You're required by law to register if you have a vacant building. For residential registrations, it's $0 for their initial year. Most of those were last year. So you'll notice we don't have a ton of money incoming from this as a revenue source, but we did have several register. We had 80, as I mentioned earlier. Their second year, it's a $50 renewal. If they're Category 1, which is none, which is no code violations, then Category 2 and 3 get subsequently higher. Non-residential structures, think of vacant buildings that are commercial buildings. There's an initial fee on that, which we wanted to make for. You directed us to make sure that those commercial buildings were really kind of one of the focuses of this project. So you have those listed in front of you. I'm going to continue to move on. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Was this sent out to the property owners?
It was.
The cost?
Yes, sir. And then if they do not comply, it was a $500 fine per day. So if they refuse to register after we in good faith contacted them, you gave us the right to give them an additional fine of $500 per day. Admittedly, as staff, we were figuring a lot of this out last year. So we did not issue those fines last year. This year we plan on taking that step forward and making sure that we're really being on top of our property owners to comply with that. There's a couple exemptions that you allowed for property owners that to not pay the fee, but they do still need to register the building. So for one, they're actively marketed for sale for more than a year. Two, structures are under renovation for up to 1 year. So if they're under construction for 3 years, they no longer get that fee. After the first year of renovation, if they're not ready to move on it, they still have to pay the registration fee. Number three, the structures are actively being transferred to a new owner. They're either under probate or there's a sale pending. Anything of those line can be considered under item three. This applies right now if there's a building that's been vacated because of a natural disaster. If there's a home that was destroyed by the hurricane because a tree fell through it, we were not going to penalize someone through that. If they were Category 1 without any code infractions over the past year, we don't make them pay the registration fee. But that's really up to me and Bob to help stay on top of that, make sure we're not allowing that to people to take advantage of that, make sure we're issuing our infractions and notices as we're supposed to do as code enforcement. And the sixth one is if the buildings are deficient, the owner has given this and the city has given permission to demolish it. For example, on the greenhouse that we demolished in August or early September, that's a good example of that. If they gave us permission to do it, they wouldn't have to pay the. So if they're on the demo list and they've given us permission, they wouldn't have to pay the registration fee. There are two additional notes just to kind of be aware of. Just because they're exempt from the fees, they still have to provide their documentation to us. If they don't provide that, they are still subject to the $500 non-compliance fine. And they can also appeal any fees or decision of the code enforcement officer about the vacant building directly to city council. We have not had any of that But it is possible that as we continue to, as I would say, step up this project and begin enforcing it more, a little bit more strictly, you may have that in the next year. As I mentioned earlier, we had 80 vacant buildings identified. That should be 48 remain vacant. 11 of those vacancies are under remodel, construction, or exempt activities. And 37 of those remain vacant without exempt activities. Our kind of summary of this as staff is that it's a good first start, but it was also a learning curve for us, and we have a good foundation. We have the systems internally in place now that we can hopefully set this up as we move forward next year. And we hope to really continue to build on what this year was. We hope to get that number down significantly as those fines begin to increase.
I'm surprised that we're already 50% or better than that.
Yeah, it's been pretty good, and a lot of that, we found that as long as you're just communicating with the business owners or the property owners, a lot of times they're already taking steps to mitigate that. We can sometimes help them to continue that, to make it step forward. But they usually respond pretty well. We haven't had too many people respond very harshly or negatively, but like I said, we also weren't issuing heavy fines either. So as that steps up, I know all of you are very involved in our communities. You might be getting phone calls or emails about that. But this is a ordinance that you all authorize us to proceed with. So we'll continue to take those steps and do what you've directed us to do.
Thank you, Reagan. That was very good.
He's not done.
You got questions?
Not yet.
Got
the looking ahead
slide. Did I miss a page?
Yes, you did.
But really, just as we go into the next year, last year we began that on January 22nd. We will keep that one-year renewal for this year. You all directed us to have that done on November 6th. So all these vacant buildings will recur on November 6th. We're going to do prorated fees this year, and we're going to apply them all to reapply again on November 6th of 2025. So they'll be actually have to go through this twice in less than 1 year. That's as we get on track with the schedule that you dictated to us in your ordinance. It says November 6th. So we're going to make sure we're on track with that next year as well. But then we'll just continue to inform the public. And inform you all as council.
So did we do, I'm sorry, I missed it. Did we do the renewal on November 6th?
So we as staff missed that. We were not prepared for that, and that falls on mostly me as overseeing your code enforcement. Our plan to remedy that is we renew it at the year mark, January 22nd, and then again on November 6th.
Okay.
So that we apologize for that. That falls on us as staff.
Cool.
How many of those buildings on Main Street are falling into this right now?
Every vacant building on Main Street qualifies.
Okay. Any pushback on any of those?
We have. That's one of the only ones. There are two properties that the owners, owned by the same owner that he claims is used as storage, that we, under our definitions, believe is still a vacant building. So we'll continue to impose those restrictions and fines on him and until you all tell us not to. If he appeals, then that'll be your decision to deal with. But at the time, we'll continue to press on them and try to get those buildings occupied and give some incentive to the property owners to make sure it remains. Those projects keep moving, especially with our downtown streetscape on the horizon. Okay. We want to make sure our downtown looks good.
Do you have a map or a list of these that we can come by and take a look at?
I do have a list, and I can distribute those if you'd like them.
Yeah, I'll make them.
Reagan, what is your definition of vacant? What are we using to determine this vacant?
I believe that it is a property that is in the exact ordinance. It's written in your ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding off the top of my head is that it is not actively occupied for the use it was intended for based on zoning designation.
And no utilities are owned?
I do not believe that is the case.
Because the reason I'm asking, if you have a building that you're paying utilities on, even though you have nothing in it, would you consider that one a vacant? Because you got them commercial buildings, and what we don't want is somebody to go up there and turn the utilities on and say, it's not vacant anymore, we got utilities.
I'll check the code on that, but my understanding off the top of my head is no.
Okay.
That is not allowable I guess, exemption, if you will. They'll still have to register unless it's being actively used for the purpose given to it in the zoning designation. Or at least under one of these exemptions that I provided to you.
Kevin, the Municipal Association had a discussion about this a few years ago about warehouses, about adding something to the property taxes for people using these vacant buildings just for warehouse use. Is that something we might need to look at, or if some of these just continue to stay?
I guess we could.
I know there's a lot of pushback on it at the time. There's a lot of discussion about it back then, but I hadn't heard it brought up in the last couple of years.
Yeah, my suggestion would be you give this another year to cycle through. Again, I'll go to what Reagan said a minute ago. We made a lot of headway just telling people mm-hmm. this was something they were going to have to, or they were going to be faced with this if their properties remained vacant. And I think when we go through this process again, that number is going to come way down, and then we're going to end up with just a few that we're working through.
Mm-hmm. But do you know if that ever got passed? Wasn't that something in the state that they were looking at?
I don't recall. I remember hearing about it, but I don't remember receiving anything that said it did pass.
Yeah, and I hadn't heard anything else, so I'm not sure. I didn't know. But thank you. That was very thorough, Reagan.
Yes, sir. Any questions you have, I'm always available in my office, and I have had that registry list if you guys like
to. We'll drop it in the admin report this week.
Good deal.
Good work.
Congratulations to everybody yesterday.
Thank you.
Reagan, I'll come over in a minute.
All right, next, presentation regarding the PMPA.
Y'all and your power.
So, Mayor and Council, we've divided this into two parts. One is, a lot of this, I think, should be taking place in the public domain. So anybody that is a citizen of Westminster has certainly the right to know this information. And there are a couple of matters as it relates to the legality of some of this that we will discuss in executive session. But so the way we have this is your last open session item, then we go to executive session, and then we'll move quickly into those few legal questions. So when it comes to PMPA, we really have two parts to our participation with PMPA. And if you love acronyms, you're going to love this presentation. If you don't love them, you won't love the presentation. I apologize. We have the Catawba Project Power Sales Agreement, and then we have the Supplemental Power Sales Agreement. Those two go hand in glove, and more or less, we have to have both of them running at all times. So I'm going to start with the Catawba Project Power Sales Agreement. This agreement, in essence, makes us a member of PMPA. So we talk about PMPA all the time. What makes us a member? It is this agreement in which we, along with nine other cities, jointly own 25% of Unit 2 at the Catawba Nuclear Station that makes energy ready and available to us. We'll often refer to that as capacity. And then actually delivers that electricity to us. We call that energy. So you got capacity and energy. You got to have both. You want them to have them on standby with the capacity, ready to give you the electricity, and then you want the electricity. But they have to go together. So that's essentially what this agreement that was signed in 1980 says. In terms of a timeline, Westminster signed it in 1980. The effort, I think, was actually started in 78, 79. It is set to expire in 2034, which is before the nuclear plant is set to reach the end of its licensing, which is 2042. Next to acronyms, there's a bunch of dates in here. So you all have a copy of this. I hope you'll take it home, read it when you can't sleep. We had originally, I'm getting ahead of myself. Be able to look at my own notes on this. Yeah, so right now, the current Catawba Project Power Sales Agreement is set to expire in 2042. However, we have heard from Duke that they plan to ask to have the license renewed for an additional 20 years, which would take the life out to 2062. As a point of reference, our own Oconee Nuclear Station is currently going through that relicensing evaluation to give it an additional 20 years. A lot of these plants were built with the idea they would last 40 years, and they're finding out that if they're well maintained, they can actually last much longer. There's you guys that went to PMPA heard time and again, there is going to get to be a bigger and bigger demand for electricity as we go into the future. And as it stands right now, we do not have enough, I say we, the industry as a whole does not have enough energy to be able to deliver for what they think the demand is going to be. The PMPA board has initiated drafts of a new Catawba Project Power Sales Agreement, which means the one we're in now is set to expire in 2034. The board is looking at right now, within the next year, adding another 50 years to go out to 2062 on that contract. That is a long time away. At the same time, you may recall at the PMPA conference this summer, Joel Ledbetter and the other folks that presented the information went to great efforts to say these things often come in 10-year increments ahead of time. The other side of what we have, so you have the Catawba Project Power Sales Agreement. Now we have a Supplemental Power Sales Agreement. So think of Catawba Project Power Sales Agreement as the electricity that is held for us and delivered to us at the nuclear station. Well, we actually have to transmit it across the lines, and all that entails with transmitting across the lines is contained in the Supplemental Power Sales Agreement. The current one that we have right now is set to expire. We signed one of these in 1980, right after we signed the Catawba Project Power Sales Agreement. And in 2018, the City of Westminster, along with Rock Hill and the City of Greer, exercised a 10-year out clause, because that's the quickest you can get out, to get out of the supplemental agreement. I can't give you a whole lot of rationale as to why that happened, but it changed the dynamics and everything that we're dealing with today. The three cities I just mentioned, Westminster, Rock Hill, and Greer, we are all set to end that agreement last day of 2028. The other seven cities ends the last day of 2029, so they're 1 year behind us. That also makes a difference in how we structure these agreements, because we in essence have two different data sets that we're dealing with. Ours is good, like I said, through December 31st, 2028, which is really just 4 short years away. You know, if you sleep real hard tonight, it might be 4 years when you wake up. PMPA is also currently working on a new supplemental power sales agreement. For all the participants that are interested, now we believe there are some participants that are not going to choose that option. I should have started off by saying we had an October planning meeting with PMPA, which is why I'm bringing this to you, and I expect you're going to have a lot of decisions to make for PMPA and our relationship to it in 2025. I wish we weren't this close to having to make this many decisions, but me wishing it isn't changing it. We will have to decide, I'm going to go to the last bullet point down there, if we are going to have a supplemental power sales agreement before the end of 2025. We may actually have to make that decision by March. A lot of that is dictated by what is happening on the board. So a couple of things, kind of given like what do we need to consider in making this decision? What is in the supplemental power sales agreement? Well, there are actually 15 different components. They get rather technical, so what I've done is rolled them up into five right here. Supplemental capacity and energy, so we talked about having the capacity, and then you talk about getting the electricity. Backstand, which just means if we aren't getting that power from Catawba, that it comes to us from somewhere else. You may ask, does a nuclear reactor ever not work? Absolutely, it does not work sometimes. They go down routinely for refueling, so every time they have to change those nuclear rods in and out, usually that's about anywhere from 19 to 45 days, depending on what other maintenance that they do in there as well. So when that happens, we rely on Santee Cooper to provide that power into the PMPA system. We also have within the supplemental power sales agreement is there are months where we have excess power that needs to be sold and is sold on the open market. There is the transmission, and that's where it gets really technical. There are three or four components to transmitting that electricity from wherever it's coming from to get to us. And then you also have the cost or the agreement with PMPA for them to actually manage all these components for us. So right now I am expecting that in 2025 we will be presented with a supplemental power sales agreement that will cover 2025 through 2034. So that goes through the end of our current Catawba Project power sales agreement. You have to have some, these components that's in supplemental, you have to have whether we're going through PMPA or not. So when you look at them together, in order for us to stay a member of PMPA, we have to have a Catawba Project power sales agreement. So right now we have one, it's set to expire in 2034. They're working on drafts to have one that will go through 2062. You also have to have a supplemental power sales agreement for all the reasons that are on that previous slide, those five things that we need to do. So boiling it down into kind of big, simple decisions, meaning there's a lot of other data that feeds into these decisions, is will Westminster continue as a participant in a new Catawba Project power sales agreement? Meaning right now we're in it till 2034. Do we want to be in it until 2062? If the answer is yes, then we would remain a member of PMPA. If the answer is no, then we have at least one of two decisions. Do we want to remain an electricity provider, or do we want to go out on the open market and secure that power under what's called a wholesale contract? Either of those would be open to us. And then where I have we could have another entity come in and provide that electricity. So think Blue Ridge or Duke. It's going to be one of those. We've got that O&M agreement with Blue Ridge. They could easily provide that service. We would have to talk to them ahead of time and have that buy-in. The second big question is, will Westminster continue as a participant in the supplemental power sales agreement? If yes, then all the components that we listed on the previous slide, those five things, will be wrapped up into that. And that would extend through the 2034, which takes us to the end of the current Catawba Project power sales agreement. If no, then we have to go out and secure each of those components ourselves. That's a big lift for us to go out and do that. So coming up, I think what we're going to be faced with in 25 is, at a minimum, we got to answer that bottom question. Will we continue with supplemental power sales agreement? My recommendation is yes, because we've got to at least get through 2034. We can't get out of that Catawba Project power sales agreement prior to 2034. Then the next big question comes, do we want to re-up, as we might phrase it, to go and plan for Westminster to continue to be a part of PNPA through 2062?
Yeah.
That's a pretty heavy decision that we're going to have, I think, in our 2025 future.
I think the question is there an opportunity to save the citizens' money on power if we were to go another route, or is it in our best interest to stay where we're at? So, I mean, without seeing numbers.
You watch your national politics. That's kind of what we all been watching. I mean, when the current administration shut off all the natural gas, it looked like we were going to be great staying with nuclear. But now you've got that change. It may not. I mean, it's just a, we're in the same position everybody else was here in 1980. We got to figure out what we want to decide and what's best. But you don't. You never know. But
and that can change every 4 years.
The rest of it, you got some in executive session, right?
Yeah, so I've got a couple of things to talk to you about in executive session that relates to the legality of these two components. I'll just kind of reiterate, we're going to have to decide that bottom question very likely by March, at least in 2025 sometime. The bigger question, there is a push by the general manager, Joel Ledbetter, and members of the board to go ahead and get a new Catawba Project power sales agreement in place, which takes us out to 2062. What I've conveyed as your board director is we don't know yet. So there are some cities that say we're in, there's some that have said they're out, and there is at least Westminster saying we don't know. We've got to do some more analysis. So this is all I have. If you have any questions about any of that that you want to have in open session, I'm ready for you to go into executive session. It's not going to take long for this particular part of it, because it really is just kind of 3 points that we need to. I need it to be in your awareness and in your minds so that we can start thinking through how we want to answer it.
I just have one question. So, look at Westminster, Greer, and Rock Hill. That's a big stretch down there where it says it expires on December 31st, 2028. So it's not necessarily the size of the town, right?
No. So back when that decision was made, there were, for lack of a more polished way of saying it, Davey, there were alliances on the board that were making. Some were wanting to go in one direction, some were wanting to go in another. And those three cities, which include Westminster, decided they wanted to initiate the push in the direction that we're headed. Rock Hill and Greer, very light. They have the wherewithal to go out and get supplemental all on their own.
Right.
They're very big. And they want to do that. As a point of just kind of comparison, I've been in some of those discussions. So don't worry about what I mean when I say megawatt hours. Just listen to the numbers. So more or less, we have reserved for us each month 5 megawatt hours. So 5. Most months we use about 2. So some of the other cities, I think Rock Hill is using 175. So they're at 175 and we're at 2. That's a really big difference. What we need to operate an electric system isn't that different from what Rock Hill needs. You still have to have linemen, equipment, you gotta have poles and lines. Now their footprint is much bigger, their customer base is much bigger, but in terms of the percentage, we have to have the same thing. When I was a part of some of the discussions to get a different supplemental agreement instead of going through PNPA, I was on one call where the plus or minus, so just think the give or take, was 5, meaning they would sell 100 megawatts of power plus or minus 5, so it could be 105 megawatts or it could be 95 megawatts. Well, for a city the size of Rock Hill, that makes sense. we are smaller than the plus or minus. So we're at 2. So the plus or minus, we fall within the margin of error in terms of getting a contract, and we could very easily have a very difficult time getting anyone to provide that small amount of electricity to us. So that really backs up a lot of the decisions that we have to make. Is one, it's complicated to go out and do, which we can unwind that complexity and do it, but then two, is there anyone likely to serve us at the size that we are? And at least the one company that was on the line that day, they're like, well, hey, our plus or minus is 5. It's like, well, Westminster's half your plus or minus. We're in the margin of error by half. So just kind of keep that in mind as we go through it, that in terms of our size, we are a very small utility. Doesn't mean it's bad. It means there's some complications in terms of us being able to go out to someone who isn't PMPA and be able to get to buy wholesale electricity for 3 megawatts a month. That's pretty small.
So in that agreement of the 5, they don't let you change that?
So we do have the ability to change it. Okay. So that's a great question. As we're looking at doing a new agreement, they're asking, what do you want the right size to?
Okay.
So right now the way it works is, even though we're reserved 5, if we don't use it, then it's automatically used by the other cities. So most of the time it's Rock Hill and Greer. Under the new agreement, if they reserve 5, we have to pay for 5 whether we use it or not. So at a very minimum, we would have to right size the amount we want. We would want to bring that down, but you also have to use a little bit of a crystal ball to say, how much are we going to need a decade from now, 20 years from now? It's really difficult to be able to, predict that. So everybody on the board is going through those kind of machinations. It's like, gosh, 50 years is a long time, and we're looking to make decisions now. I believe PMPA has made those adjustments 2 or 3 times in the current contract life. So every now and again, they go in and they will right-size those numbers. But that's an excellent question. Because right now we benefit from the fact that Rock Hill and Greer purchased that rather than us having to pay for it. And then months where we go from 2, like I think this summer, one of these summer months, we went up a little over 3.5 megawatts. So we came closer to using our allocation, but so did everybody else because it was so hot.
Right.
Any other questions?
Do you know where Greer and Rock Hill are going? Or what they're going to do with their supplemental? Are they going to try to go in together with somebody? Or?
They are, right now everybody is keeping this like DEFCON, whatever the high number is, DEFCON 5. Is that the high number?
Yeah, it's close.
Very, very secretive. Most cities don't want to tell the other cities what they're up to. It's very secretive. I ain't get them to talk about a lot of other things, but what they're really planning to do is elusive. Because everybody's competing for it.
Sure.
I can see Greer and Rock Hill trying to work together in the behind the scenes myself. I wonder if we need to get in on the cloak and dagger side of that too.
Well, I've been in the cloak and dagger side of that with them, and I am no more illuminated than I was before. Because even though they have very well-informed, high-paid consultants, and I've been a part of those discussions, what they actually are intending to do, they are not letting anybody. I don't think they're even sharing with each other, Rock Hill and Greer, at West Point.
Okay.
Again, because when they're going out on the open market, they actually become competitors.
Yeah.
PMPA, we're all in it together, and we compete within PMPA, but when you get outside of that, then it opens it wide open.
Okay.
Wide open.
Thank you.
All right, so if you guys are ready, I'm ready for you to go into executive session. I'll finish it.
We take a quick break. My turn to have to pee. Sorry. Mr. Mayor.
Make a motion.
Motion to recess.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Black and white.
You gotta let the public get out anyway.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, it was.